Senate tax, come to order. Secretary, please take the roll.
Senator Zolnikov?
Here.
Senator O'Brien?
Here.
Senator McLafferty?
Excused.
Senator Beard?
Here.
Senator Temple?
Yes.
Senator Hayman?
Here.
Senator Ellsworth?
Excused.
Molnar?
Here.
Senator Treves?
Here.
Senator McCamey?
Here.
Senator Dunwell?
Here.
Chairman Hertz?
Here. All right, members, we have three bills today. We need to try to keep these bills moving along today. So I'm going to limit testimony to 10 to 15 minutes for proponents, 10 to 15 minutes for opponents, and about 10 to 15 minutes for questions from the committee. So appreciate if everybody kind of keep their comments short and to the bill. So with that, we're going to open up on Senate Bill 408. Senator Molnar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Brad, M-O-L-N-A-R, Senate District 28, Yellowstone County. Mr. Chairman, you might be wondering why a fish and game bill is before Senate tax. It's because the Fish and Game Committee is hardworking, and we, on the other hand, had time on our hands. But it also has the word tax in it, so it's proper. I would ask you look at page one of the bill. Matter of fact, let's start with the basics. Look at page two, line nine. That should end with land. The rest is a strikeout. If you don't have that, you do not have the current version, and we'll have to take care of that. And backpedaling a bit, page one, double I, line 26, says federal land managed by the U.S. Forest Service and BLM. So what the current situation is, and why I bring this bill to amend the current situation, is let's say that a landowner owns 10,000 acres, and behind that, he's got a road that goes to there, he goes feeds his cows. And behind that is Forest Service, where he has a lease, and BLM, where he doesn't have a lease. We now say that he can't give access to the BLM if his neighbor has a lease. I would direct you to Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the U.S. Constitution, the Supremacy Clause. The Forest Service and the BLM determine access laws and rule, not the state of Montana. We cannot tell somebody that if they have legal access to public land, they may not access it. Forest Service BLM says, there's a mine over here, you can't hunt because there's people working. There's oil lease over here, you can't be shooting around there because you have oil work going on. You can go over here. They're the only ones that can make that determination. The state of Montana has decided they will make the determination. It's constitutionally undefendable. So I strike that in both sections of this law, Section 1, Section 2 of this bill. If you are paid $15,000 or $3,000, depending on the program, to allow access across your private land to the public land, once somebody has accessed that public land, they can access public land. That's the law. So I'm trying to bring us into that. There may be one or two people that oppose a Molnar bill, even this one. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will sit down. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll start with proponents, and we'll give you till about 9:20 or so. So proponents on Senate Bill 408.
Chair Hertz, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Leo. Last name is spelled L-E-O-W, and I'm here representing the Montana chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Montana has 3.1 million acres of state and federal lands that we cannot get to. Montana FWP offers two voluntary programs that seek to improve access to inaccessible or difficult to access public lands, the Unlocking Public Lands Program and the Public Access Land Agreements, the PAL Act, that we're talking about here today. Unfortunately, both are underutilized, and for that reason, there are efforts afoot to improve that, to improve participation in those access programs. Removing an application fee and lowering the definition of inaccessible from 3 miles to 1 mile. These are good ideas as well. But the real change that's needed is in this bill. Landowners are currently ineligible if someone else holds the grazing lease on public lands that they want to open access to. This reinforces a false premise that because someone holds that lease, that they also get to control the access to those public lands. Of course, that is not the case. And rather than perpetuating this way of thinking, it is time to correct it. So doing so would drastically increase the number of eligible landowners. So it's actually good for those landowners that currently cannot participate in the PAL Act, meaning more money for those landowning neighbors and more public acres being voluntarily opened for hunters. And of course, we like that as well. Simply put, if a neighbor wants to let us walk across their land to access adjacent public lands, they should be able to do so, encouraged to do so, and rewarded for that, not prohibited from it. With that, we ask the committee to give Senate Bill 408 a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponents in the room? We don't have anybody online, do we? Okay. No proponents online, so we'll go to opponents in the room. So you got till about 9:25 or so.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nicole Rolf, R-O-L-F. I represent the Montana Farm Bureau Federation, and we rise in opposition to House Bill 408 this morning. As you already heard, this section of law that we're dealing with here is commonly referred to as PALA, the PALA program. It was created in 2019, and it was a great compromise and a great way to incentivize landowners to provide more access to public lands for recreation of many types. It was a good deal for all folks involved and really provided the carrot, not the stick approach that we always talk about. At that time, there was a lot of discussion about what to do with these, you know, isolated parcels or sections that one person leased, but others all surrounded. And the legislature made the decision to take the approach that is current law, and I think that was wise for several reasons. So, because it's a little complicated, I drew a map, and I just drew it on my lap back here, so it's probably not that great, but I can go through many different scenarios with you anytime after the hearing if you'd like. But you can see this is a scenario. The red line is a border between two ranches, say. This is a road and this is a road. This is ranch number one, this is ranch number two. So under current law, if ranch number one has the lease on this BLM section, they can enter a PALA agreement to allow access across either by walking or driving or whatever it may be across this path. That was the way it was set up. Under this bill, by striking the language that is stricken in section two, it would allow Mr. or Miss number two to allow access from their road to across their private onto this this BLM or Forest Service section. The issue that arises here is that this could potentially cause, well, first I should be clear too, that this landowner number two, regardless of PALA agreement or not, can still allow folks to cross their property to access this BLM or this Forest Service, this public land. That is the law, and that nobody in my organization refutes that. The difference here is that if they were also to get a tax benefit from allowing such a thing, there could potentially be some heartburn between neighbors raised. I also wanted to mention that when I promote this program to my members, which we often do as a way to help increase access and also help our members have more ability for these choices, one of the first things they say is, oh my goodness, well, couldn't that potentially, you know, we could have some neighbor-to-neighbor conflict here if suddenly my neighbor's getting paid to let people onto my lease and yada, yada, yada. And I can always point to this section in code that this actually strikes and say, actually, that's protected. So I do think there is a risk of, if we go down this road, of having folks that would have otherwise participated suddenly be somewhat turned off. So I fear that this will be counterproductive. It's been a great program. It's not very old, even though 19 might seem a long time ago. It's not that long ago. I think we need to do more to promote the current program and help it work. So I'd ask for your no vote, and thank you for your time. And if you want to see any more beautiful drawings, I'm happy to draw them afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rayleigh Honeycutt, H-O-N-E-Y-C-U-T-T, with the Montana Stock Growers Association, as well as representing the Montana Public Lands Council, which is an organization that is a group of livestock producers that graze on public lands. I don't have any drawings, so I feel like Ms. Rolfe like stole the show this morning so early, but really just wanted to reiterate what she said. One thing that I did want to highlight that is this PALA program is working. It's working. It was put together, as was mentioned, in 2019, and it had a lot of thoughtful consideration, a lot of consensus, a lot of discussion between variety and multiple stakeholder groups, and really, as was mentioned, a private property owner can provide access to any parcel of public land without this program. What is key about this program is it incentivizes and provides a tax tax credit for that person that owns the permit, because there is a burden that is put on a permittee. They are responsible for the noxious weed management, they're responsible for fencing, they're responsible for the land stewardship, and so for them to receive the credit, it makes sense. Whereas for someone who does not have that permit, it doesn't necessarily make sense for them to receive that. So for that, we ask for your no pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent in the room. Seeing none, we have an opponent online.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have Ed Beal.
Thank you. Can't hear you, Mr. Beal. You might need to unmute yourself there. Libby, can you?
I don't know what's going on, Mr. Chairman. Everything looks good on my end.
All right. So maybe we'll circle back around to Mr. Beal here. If Libby, if you can bring him back up, we can bring him back in during questions also. So
that's something.
We'll go to informational witnesses. Informational witnesses in the room.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. For the record, I'm Hope Stockwell. That's S-T-O-C-K-W-E-L-L. I'm the administrator of the Parks and Outdoor Recreation Division at Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, which is where these programs are administered. Here for any questions.
Any further informational witnesses in the room? Is there any online, Libby?
There are not, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Could we check with Mr. Beal one more time and see if he might be able to connect with us?
Go ahead, Mr. Beal.
You're muted, Mr. Beal. If you could unmute yourself. Libby, is he on a phone or is he on a laptop? Can you determine?
No, he's on a computer.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, I think we're going to move on to questions from the committee. Senator Treves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question is just about, I had to catch what you were saying, the Public Access Land Agreement. I didn't know the acronym, but I found it. Saw it on your map. But how many of those are there?
Do you want to direct that question to somebody?
I think whoever has the answer to how many of those are.
Maybe
Ms. Stockwell, I guess.
Maybe Ms. Stockwell with the department.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Treves. Regarding the number of public access land agreements, this is a growing program. In 2021, we had 40 public access land agreements. In 2022, we had 53. So it is growing. There are two programs discussed here. The second program, the first section in the bill, is the Unlocking Public Lands Tax Credit Program. And in that program, we had four participating landowners receiving five tax credits in 2022.
And I guess a follow-up on the tax credits is, Mr. Chair and Ms. Stockwell, I think it says temporary here, right? So do you know when that expires?
I believe it's 2027. 2027. I appreciate the backup.
Thank you.
Senator Hayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Ms. Stockwell.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hayman.
Ms. Stockwell, so I assume that each time a landowner commits to is it the PALA program? How do you pronounce it?
We say PALA.
PALA. When they commit to that program, that gives anyone in the public access to public lands, right?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hayman, what the statute said is that those agreements may be for activities such as hunting, fishing, wildlife viewing, and other recreational activities as determined by the commission. And the agreements can be activity specific in some cases, depending on specific circumstances of a landowner, but it does allow for broad activities.
Okay. All right.
Through the chair, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up. So in looking at the current law, what my confusion is if we add an additional is that the problem, adding an additional access to the public lands via another landowner? Is that I'm trying to understand the conflict here.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hayman may be better redirected to one of the opponents, but as I understood their concerns, it was related to getting into conflict between neighbors, where one neighbor has the lease on the public property and the other neighbor providing the access through the PALA program does not.
Would you like to redirect that to
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to redirect it to Nicole Rolls.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hayman.
So I'm trying to become really clear here in looking at this bill, and it seems like we already under current law are accomplishing what we want to accomplish. And I'm trying to understand what the, so if you have two landowners and they both border public lands, and one of them currently has a PALA agreement, and they manage the access to this public land, and the other neighbor rancher doesn't have it at that point. If that rancher number two, as you pointed out, all of a sudden decides to give access to this piece of public land, I don't get why that would be a problem. So,
okay, sure. Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hayman, first I would say the important thing to remember is all people are different, and some neighbors may never have conflict, but some certainly will. So I think the difference is, I'm so glad I have my beautiful map, is that under current law, with the PALA Act, it's the lessee of this BLM section, so they have the grazing lease on here, that is able to obtain the PALA agreement that they negotiate with the commission, you know, whether it's for hunting or bird watching or all of the above, they get to grant that. Landowner number two would still, like, it's their private property. They can let somebody walk or drive or dance across their property to get to this BLM section if they would like, but they don't
benefit from being able to enter one of those agreements. So where I think the conflict comes in is, you know, the agreement is an incentive, and it's getting the people who have the lease on the property to be able to grant the access and let people through. I think just in a practical implication is if you're in this kind of a situation, and I'm landowner number one, and I happen to be back here fencing or whatever, and I find someone in this BLM that isn't, well, that could have been from my neighbor. It could be my neighbor or you know, whoever he led across. They may likely have contacted me and say, hey, I've got some people coming out and they're going to be hunting and they'll be on your side of the fence or whatever. Whereas with a PALA agreement in place, that would not be as common amongst neighbors to make that kind of common courtesy announcement, because it wouldn't have to be done. You know, that access is granted. So you just have, the potential. I mean, we see this in other situations where neighbors just like to have courtesy from their neighbors to let them know who's coming in. But I think the main thing is about the incentive, and it's that lessee number one and rancher number one is the one who gets that incentive. I'm sorry, that's kind of a roundabout answer, but if you want to follow up, I can try to answer better if that didn't quite get to your.
No, I get it, but it's interesting.
Through the chair,
you so
please.
Much.
Are you okay, Ms. Rolfe, while you're there? So, in regards to rancher number one who owns lease on the BLM land, so I can see a point where they might not want to enter into an access agreement. Particularly during hunting season, they may have a lot of livestock on that piece of property, so they really don't want a lot of hunters in there, and it probably might even not make sense because there may not be a lot of game in there anyway. So and then I could see that is why we wouldn't want rancher number two to all of a sudden be able to open that up due to the circumstances. Would that be a legitimate reason why someone might not want to enter into an agreement?
Mr. Chairman, that's absolutely right. They might have chosen not to because, like you said, this could be their summer or their fall pasture, and they're going to have a lot of cattle back there. It's not a great place for people to be hunting, because when the cattle come in, the wildlife are kind of going to move across the fence or something anyways. And because this, you know, rancher number one has the lease on this, they will be utilizing that for one of their multiple uses, and all multiple uses are important. But they, since they are, you know, the lessee, they know what's important on the ground at that time.
And then one final question. Could you remind me on, now that's way off topic, so I'm not going to go there. Questions from the committee. Senator McCamey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Rolfe, please. And Mr. Chair, Ms. Rolfe, first of all, these are contracts, are they not? Okay. And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, Ms. Rolfe, as you said, the individual who receives, who is signing this agreement, this contract, is responsible for the fencing, for the upkeep, for the noxious weed eradication, for the actual stewardship of this land, and they treat it as if it were their own land, in that they give it the same type of consideration. Isn't that correct, Ms. Rolfe?
Mr. Chair, Senator McCamey, you're absolutely right, especially on BLM allotments. These are connected under the Taylor Grazing Act to rancher number one through a lease. And so, yes, they very much treat these lands and steward them as if they were their own, and manage them in very positive ways. And your question actually brings up another point as to why, you know, you're right. These PALA agreements are contracts. And so one of the things that makes them valuable is that they are granting this access. Suddenly, if you had more than one
entity trying to grant access to this, I think that would devalue the value of this and maybe may not let, not incentivize or not make the commission so jazzed about granting these or devaluing them.
Another follow-up, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Ms. Rolfe, so along that same line, if you have two people who have a contract on the same land, I can see that perhaps one might not be able to, they would have to do some coordination there, and their styles of stewardship might be a little different. Their ideas of when they should be allowing access or whatever is going to become much more complicated. And I can see that. Do you think that there is even that kind of possibility of coordination? I guess that's supposition. Let me change the question.
You have a question in there?
There was a question in there somewhere. But it mostly was in my mind. Okay, but I do have another question. Okay, are we talking about, Mr. Chair and Ms. Rolfe, are we talking about strictly BLM here, or are we talking about state lands? Because state lands are also also treated very similarly.
Mr. Chairman, Senator McCamey, I was looking for my backup here, and yes, we both agree it's both federal and state lands.
Thank you.
Thanks. That's Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Rolfe. Excuse me. It's not even that early. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rolfe, so what in this bill would make you a proponent? What could be done to it to make you a proponent? Giving all the landowners a tax credit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell, I think... I believe that the original law, as it was originally placed into code, is the best way for us to continue this program and to continue to make it a growing program, continue to get more landowners in there. So I would say there's no fix to this bill for my members.
Follow up, please, with the information witness, Ms. Hope.
Stockwell.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Hope. So what can be done with the original PALA program to encourage participation from a public outreach standpoint? And can you do that? And will you do that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell, we do actively market and outreach these programs of all types to landowners to see what tool in our toolbox of access programs might work best for their circumstances. Particular to these two programs, the last 2 years, we have done a geographic review of inaccessible or underaccessible public acres and identified the adjacent leaseholders and directly mailed to them mailers and brochures, letting them know about the program, and that did increase participation in the program.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you doing that and hope you can keep it up. Hope you're funded enough to keep it up, too. Mr. Chair, may I have another question for Ed Beal to see if he can get back on?
We'll see. So
my constituent and owns a sporting goods store.
You want to see if we can get Ed Beal up here? If he's still on.
No, I guess not.
All right, we'll move along here.
Thank you,
Senator Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Nicole Rolfe, please.
Ms. Rolfe?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rolfe, can you just give us a quick summary of what it took to be able to allay any fears or doubts about the program to your member groups to get this program in place? We do have a lot of conflicting interests, and I would like to know how you were able to allay any suspicions, please.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Beard, that's a great question. as you probably know, farmers and ranchers, they like to ruminate about things. And that's good because that helps you usually come to a good conclusion. You know, many of us were involved, many of you that are in this room, were involved in, you know, the back and forth with creating the PALA program in 2019. And we talked a lot about all the things that would help make people comfortable. I think for my folks, making sure that it is voluntary and incentive-based, which the program is, the carrot, not the stick, was something that really helped. Well, that obviously helps get people excited about it, but then also the sideboards that you know, make sure that this is regarding land that is leased by the landowner that is granting access is also a really good safety net in there. So that's a quick summary.
Follow up.
I'd like to follow up with Ms. Stockwell, please. Mr. Chair, Ms. Stockwell, from the perspective of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, what did you see from the public side in developing this program and allaying fears or suspicions amongst the parties who all want to get access to these public lands, please?
Chairman Hertz and Senator Beard, not having been working for the department at that time, the perspective was different. And honestly, I've had a baby since then, and I don't know that my memory is good enough to provide the answer that you're looking for. I'm really sorry.
Senator O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Leo, please. Mr. Chair, Mr. Leo, I'm having, as I'm making sense, and the map was very helpful that we were, the hand-drawn map was helpful. I'm picturing what seems to me to be exclusive access to our public lands by the leaseholder of that, and it's a two-part question. If that is accurate, do landowners or leaseholders, I guess, pay more, to your knowledge, if they have exclusive access? Or is that not accurate? Do they not have exclusive access to that land? Because it just seems like it's an equity issue.
Chair Hertz, Senator O'Brien, I'm not sure I'm quite understanding the question. I mean, you say pay more. Could you elaborate on what exactly you're referring to?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. And I am making reference to the so access to public lands, whether it's BLM or state land, that is leased by a rancher number one, we'll say. It appears that as we stand now, there is exclusive access. And this bill attempts to incentivize rancher number two, for example, to have opportunities to offer access.
Thank you. I'm following you now. Yes, obviously the crux of the issue here is, can that landowner that does not have a grazing lease when a grazing lease exists participate in this program? And right now the answer is no. This bill would rectify that. And, you know, as far as exclusive access, that wouldn't be exactly accurate, because that neighboring landowner who does not have the grazing lease can still provide access to the public. They just can't take advantage of PALA. And obviously, we would like to see more participation in PALA. We believe that by removing that barrier, we'll see more participation in PALA, which is, again, good for that landowner who doesn't happen to have the adjacent grazing lease, also good for the public that gains the access.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Temple.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Ms. Stockwell. Ms. Stockwell, these are no negotiated prices to get access. Is it based on miles to get to it, or based on the property that is leased, or what?
Mr. Chair, Senator Temple, I'm sorry, that baby continues to trot on my short-term memory as well. But I do have the the rules here.
I guess I was looking for a formula or what.
Right. I'll just refer to what's in the rule currently for the consideration of that level of compensation. And so in negotiating for the annual payment, the department considers the acres of land accessed, the quality of the fish or wildlife habitat that may be provided by the public land that would be accessed, the duration of the access and whether it's restricted at any time, particular time during the year, for instance, during hunting season, the mode of transportation that's allowed, whether a closure could be expected and what other uses are allowed. And just another piece to your question was that the agreements are for accesses that are no longer than a mile. So they would only be up to a mile access provided.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Stockwell, so most likely if the scenario I gave where the landowners got using that for fall pasture, a lot of cattle on there, probably not very good quality hunting at that point in time, the department would probably, that would probably be a very minor amount of contribution or money they'd pay to that landowner. Would that be fair to say?
Mr. Chairman, not having been as close to the negotiations as that, I don't know that I could accurately represent that. That certainly would be part of the discussion, though. But if they're providing access, say, for a different type of broader recreational use that is a high quality in a different time of year, it might even out.
Okay. All right. One final question, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell.
Senator Molnar, Mr. Chair. Senator Molnar, is there a fiscal note on the way?
Apparently, there'll be one on Tuesday. I'm surprised that one's even required. But supposedly one is coming, and according to the note, should be on Tuesday.
Okay.
Fiscal note was requested on the 21st, so hopefully we'll see it before too long. So with that, all right, Senator Kamey, I'll give you one more, and then we're going to go on to the close here. We're getting past my time. Senator Kamey, go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Ms. Rolfe, please. Just to clarify, Mr. Chair, Ms. Rolfe, do people, do not just the public, but anybody can anybody go on to the public land, even though the lease is already assigned as an agreement, as a contract, with the individual who is doing the fencing and stewardship?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McKamey, so you're referring to the folks that access it through this PALA agreement?
Just access the land. Excuse me, Mr.
Yes.
Chair.
Okay. Yes, depending on the type of PALA that was agreed here, if it was, say, just for hiking, then hikers could, anyone who intends to go there to hike would be able to do that. If it's for all uses, hunting, hiking, bird watching, what have you, then anyone who intends to do those things could use that. Okay. I would also add that I should have hit home a little bit more on this value thing. So part of the incentive for creating these PALA agreements is to allow access to high quality opportunities. And so if landowner two is having unfettered access from their side, then for landowner number one, it's really not that much of a value to allow people over there, because there might be tons and tons of hunters already or what have you. So that's the great thing about how the law currently stands, is that it allows the commission and the landowner and the lessee to all think about what's most valuable and incentivize it properly.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Molnar, care to close on your bill?
I would, Mr. Chairman, and my closing was well worth waiting for. I appreciate your indulgence. Just a couple of very quick points I will start with, as I will close with. Not a single opponent said that if this goes to federal court and we have to explain how we have primacy over federal law that governs access, they will stand the cost. Not a single one. Heartburn between neighbors. The state of Montana is not a marriage counselor or a relationship counselor. There is heartburn between neighbors of all stripes, be they agricultural, be they just regular neighbors. No matter how you aggravate them, that's too bad. The state doesn't get involved. So let's take a look at a real-life situation, elk predation. So this rancher has this lease. Nobody can get in. He's got it outfitted. A 400-point bull elk right now is $20,000. We're offering $15,000. He's got five of them. That's $100,000. But he's got 800 head of cows in there that come across at night and eat his neighbor's hayfields. His neighbor says, this is insane. I'm opening the gate. And we say, oh, no, you're not. We're going to have shoulder season for you, though. We've done it for 10 years, and it doesn't work. The neighbors have a right to open or close the gate as they see fit. I stand before you now and say the state of Montana has no right to tell somebody they can't close the gate, lock it, and use the public ground behind them. We also don't have a right to tell the next neighbor over that he can't open the gate. It's federal land. We do not have standing, despite what this bill says. So let's take, okay, yes, it's a matter of stewardship. So far as stewardship goes, they do not lease the land, not 1 acre. They lease the land based on animal units per month. They're buying the grass, the water, and a place for the cow to stand. And if you can go, and this kind of goes to the question, down the county road, step on the BLM, nobody cares. Go up a prescriptive right trail, nobody cares. A guy has block management, lets you into that land, nobody cares. This is the only case in which they care. And the state has taken the position they will determine federal access policy to federal land. And that's the question. You don't have to like it. That's the fact. If you want to go to court and say the state of Montana does have the right to determine public access to public lands, do it. You'll lose in one split second. So all I want to do with this bill is say, if you grant access to public lands, whether you take money or not, you have granted it, and the access is legal. That's all it says.
This will close the hearing on Senate Bill 408. Committee will stand at ease a little bit. Senator Tribus, could you do me a favor and go get Senator Vermeer? He's in the room. Order. Next bill up is Senate Bill 427. Senator Vermeer, you're up.
Thank you, Chairman Hertz. My name is Terry Vermeer. I'm from Anaconda, Senate District 39, and I present to you Senate Bill number 427. I'm told this is kind of a simple bill. And just to clarify the statute of limitations, in the tax code. I'm not an expert on the tax code. If I knew a little bit more about it, I might have been appointed to the prestigious taxation committee. But I will let the experts speak on the bill, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Vermeer. All right, we're going to allow about up to 15 minutes each for proponents, opponents, and questions. So we'll get started here at the first proponent on Senate Bill 427.
Mr. Chairman, I have a handout.
Please, hand.
Right. there is more needed, I have. Mr. Chair, my name is James Suwangren, CPA PFS. I'm from Deer Lodge, Montana. The way you spell my last name is W-A-N-G-E-R-I-N. I filed a petition for an administrative rule to clarify the statute of limitations. That petition was denied by the Department of Revenue, and I requested judicial review at the District Court and at the Montana Supreme Court. If you turn to the final page of my handout, you'll find the Supreme Court conclusion. We hold that the Montana Department of Revenue correctly construed 1530-2605. And if you back up to the previous page, you'll find what was described to me as the agency-wide administrative rule, and it was required to be followed by all employees. And keep in mind that the administrative law judges are employees of the Department of Revenue. The Montana Department of Revenue contrarily asserted that the three-year deadline specified by 1530-2605 MCA applies only to the date of the initial audit adjustment notice issued by the Montana Department of Revenue. So that's the audit adjustment letter. If you back up to the next two pages, kind of the bottom to the top, we find this is the brief from the Department of Revenue to the Montana Supreme Court. And now we find out that the Department of Revenue is construing it differently. After informal review, the department sends a notice of determination that must satisfy the statute's three-year deadline, District Court Transcript, Administrative Rule 42.2.510. So I get that Montana Supreme Court says the Department of Revenue construed it correctly. My question is, which time? Because there's two different constructions here. And I still don't know. I've went through petitioning for an administrative rule, which there's been no Montana Administrative Procedure Act hearing here. There's been no hearings at all because they don't allow that in the process that I went through. So when we go to the bill itself, in the last page, we see this is applicable to the income tax years beginning after December 31st, 2023. Well, the statute of limitations is 3 years long. We don't know exactly what document we're supposed to do that with, but nevertheless, that's April 15th, 2027. My question is, what am I supposed to use for my clients, the taxpayers? How do they know what document we're using between now and 2027 when this bill actually goes into effect? If you go to the second page of the bill under B2, or 2B, 3B, I guess it is, the underlined part there, and the last sentence says, no proceeding in the Montana Tax Appeal Board may commence without assessment unless a taxpayer fails to file a return. Okay? So, I know this might sound crazy to you, but the last six times that I've had an informal appeal, there has been no notice of determination. Three of those, I waited 10 months, even though it was supposed to happen in 30 days, and then I filed at the Office of Dispute Resolution. And those three cases were dismissed because there's no notice of determination, okay? What if the same thing happens here? You don't have a final agency decision within 6 months, and if I try to file at the Montana Supreme or the Montana State Tax Appeal Board, they're probably going to dismiss that case. Now we're talking about violating the 14th Amendment of the federal Constitution, due process, because there's no trial allowed, no hearing. In 1915, the United States Supreme Court says that when it comes to individual tax litigation, people do have a right to a fair hearing. A fair hearing would involve someone who's not an employee of the Department of Revenue. And so the original bill in 2017 said that the purpose of the of reducing it from 5 years to 3 years was to be uniform with other tax statutes. Well, one of those statutes is a statute of limitations on refunds. I'm here to tell you that if you want a refund, you better file an amended return within 3 years or you don't get it. And when we switched the administrative rule on the notice of determination on September 10th of 2022 to say, you know, if the Department of Revenue doesn't respond within 45 days and issue a notice of determination, the taxpayer wins. That's exactly what should happen when the Department of Revenue does not respond with the final agency decision. The taxpayer should win. If they don't issue a final agency decision within the statute of limitations, the taxpayer should win. If we compare it to the Internal Revenue Code, the Internal Revenue Code requires a notice of deficiency. Okay? A notice of deficiency gives you the right to leave the Internal Revenue Service and go to the, you know, the tax court, but United States tax court. But in any case, you're moving out to some place where the individual is not an employee of the Internal Revenue Service. We should be doing the same thing with the Department of Revenue. We should allow people to go outside. That's the definition of determination is having made a firm decision and being resolved not to change it. That's the final agency decision. We shouldn't be using an audit adjustment letter. The department hasn't really determined the correct amount of tax. They just, you know, it's down here, but now we're going to continue on to an informal appeal to get a notice of determination. That's a supervisor review. Then it goes to the Office of Dispute Resolution. There's 6 months allowed for that. The last time I did that, there was no final agency decision. 6 months disappeared, and it's still going on. I mean, it's not going on today because we settled it in mediation, but that mediation hadn't started within that six-month period, and I was just told, well, you know, we're working with you, so the 6 months doesn't apply. Maybe we'll settle it. Well, anyway, we did, and, you know, so that's resolved. We've kind of got the thing resolved a little bit as far as notice of determination now being required, otherwise the taxpayer wins. And what I'm trying to do is to at least have you determine What did you say in 2000? What did you mean by uniform with other tax statutes? Did you mean uniform with Internal Revenue Code? Because if you did, you meant a notice of deficiency, which gives you the right to leave the agency and have an independent agency determine the case. And I really don't see the need to wait until 2028 to adopt this bill. I definitely agree with the final agency decision being the point at what it is. I definitely agree with something being defined. Right now, we have no definition of what we mean by determine the correct amount of tax. Do we want that to mean it's the auditor's determination? Do we mean we want it to be the supervisor's determination? Or do we mean we want that to be the administrative law judge, where they've made their decision and they're not going to change their mind? Now you can move on. Thank you for your time.
Any further proponents in the room? Proponents in the room? None online? We'll go to opponents. give you about up to 10-10.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Derek Bell, B-E-L-L. I'm the Montana Department of Revenue's Division Administrator for its Business and Income Tax Division, here in opposition to Senate Bill 427. And just as an aside, as I speak to why the department opposes this bill, the director and I chatted. This is not typically a position that we find ourselves in opposing legislation. It's not a position I typically, I'm not sure I've ever done it before. But I think when in candor to, with respect to the sponsor and to the proponent of the bill, if I were to stand here as an informational witness, I think that would be doing a disservice to what our opposition and what our real concerns about this bill are. And so I think if we're going to be honest about what our concerns are with this bill, we ought to be up here as oppositional. So that's why I'm here in this position, in this capacity today. Contrary to the sponsor's opening, this is not a simple bill. And I'll try and confine my comments to the bill. I would caution the committee to not take excerpts from briefing to the Montana Supreme Court or excerpts of that decision out of order. I think to the extent that the committee would like to look at the briefing or the entirety of that decision, I'd be more than happy to provide all of that information to the committee. You just need to ask. The first issue we run into with Senate Bill 427 is a timing issue. Now, this bill indicates that the Department of Revenue has to issue a final agency decision, which is the Office of Dispute Resolution, within a three-year period of time. So everything from the audit determination, the contact with the taxpayer, informal review, and a hearing or mediation before the Office of Dispute Resolution has to happen within a three-year period of time. Now, our audit campaigns are typically based on information that we receive from the Internal Revenue Service, and that runs usually a year behind. As it stands now, the data that we have from the IRS is for 2020. So now we have shrunk the period of time within which we can evaluate individual income tax compliance issues. And just from a citizen service perspective and from a, you gave us a job to do to make sure the taxpayers in Montana are paying their fair share, that does not achieve that goal. And to make that work, as you can imagine, we would need to have a sizable increase to our staff. Now, I know that no fiscal note is out there yet, so I will avoid speaking to what that might look like. But I can tell you, just given the vacancies in my division now, we could not handle the influx of having to do more audits and complete those audits in a shorter period of time. That's just without more staff. And I think it's also important to not forget that the number of income tax filers in Montana is increasing. Since 2017, there's been a 5% increase. So that's about 26,000 more individual income tax returns that we have to process and evaluate every year. So add that extra volume onto the extra volume that this bill creates. Number two, this bill does not coordinate with other statute of limitation statutes that you've already adopted and implemented in Title 50, Chapter 30. For instance, there's no coordination with 50-30-2607 or 15-30-2609. Those are both instances where the taxpayer may request to revise its return, or it's a statute of limitations for the taxpayer to seek a refund from the Department of Revenue. Both of those are tied to the specific statute that sponsor is asking you to amend in this thing, this thing here now. So we'd have different statutes of limitations applying to requests for revision, requests for refund, and audit adjustments from the Department of Revenue. That undoes not only the simplicity that you sought with reducing the statute of limitations from 5 years to three, but it creates a lot of confusion about when things are due and who's doing them. Second, or third, it creates ambiguity with another statute of limitation statute, which is 15-30-2606-1, which tolls, which indicates that statute of limitations must be told if the taxpayer engages in certain activities. If the federal government changes his or her return, if he or she changes their federal return, you have said that has to stop the statute of limitations. This statute, or this bill, says the statute of limitations has to be done within this three-year period. So now you've created two musts. We have one statute that says this must happen here, another statute that's right next door to it says this must happen over here, and they conflict with each other. You will need to tell us which must wins, because we will not be able to administer that, and that will lead to, that ambiguity will lead to litigation. What you sort of heard during the proponent's testimony is that this bill is modeled after the Internal Revenue Service. My understanding is that's modeled after the Internal Revenue Service's internal practices. This is not modeled after the Internal Revenue Code that that Congress passed. This is not based on a Treasury regulation that they implemented. This is an internal process that the Internal Revenue Service has for fulfilling its audit needs. Moreover, it allows for discretion at the manager level to waive these periods of limitations if certain circumstances exist. This bill doesn't do that. It locks the department into this really very rigid standard that, again, I think would be very, very hard for us to achieve, with the primary aim of being citizen service. I think what you've heard from the director during this session, and I think from me and other bills that have been here, is the increased focus on citizen service over the last couple of years. One of the things that we've done and that the proponent indicated was in the last year or so, we promulgated a rule that gave taxpayers additional time to review our audit letters, get with their tax practitioners or accountants, and get back to the Department of Revenue. We provided them via rule more time to do that than we had before. This bill undoes that, because what this bill does now is say, okay, we have this artificial barrier by which we have to get this assessment out the door and through the ODR process. So on the one hand, we've given the taxpayer more time to work with us informally to try and reach a solution. And on the other end, we're saying, but we got to hit this deadline, and if we're having a statute of limitation issue, the compunction would be to just get this out the door through ODR. And that's the other part of this. ODR, you created or helped create the Office of Dispute Resolution back in 1999. If you remember back then, we had a much more rigid appeal process set forth in statute. The legislature said that that's not what we want. We want a more informal, more flexible approach. You directed the Department of Revenue to adopt that approach via rule, which we have, and we've had that since 1999. The Office of Dispute Resolution, yes, those hearings officers are members of the Department of Revenue. They're not part of my division or any other division. They take their jobs very seriously. But they are going to be confronted with during those hearings or during those disputes, taxpayers can do one of three things when they get there. They can immediately move their case to the Montana Tax Appeal Board. Statutory right, and that's something that's discussed at every informal conference that the hearing examiners happen. So to the extent the taxpayer wants an outside agency or outside body to evaluate their disagreement with the department, they have that right immediately. As soon as they hit the ODR thing, it can go out the door. Two, they can engage in an informal hearing. That may take some time, depending on the circumstances of the case. There may be information that may need to be shared between the parties. And third, you can mediate the dispute. Mr. Wangern indicated that he successfully mediated a case with the department. By statute, the ODR has 180 days to resolve their cases. The back end of that is if they don't resolve it, the taxpayer can then appeal directly to MTAB. Point of all that is you've created in statute, we've created in rule, an informal process by which taxpayers can try and resolve their disputes, have a hearings officer adjudicate those disputes. And if we're now if the ODR is now confronted with a time issue where they have to get a decision out within so many days or whatever so that we don't lose the ability to issue the assessment as it stands, you're going to get less customer service or less citizen service at the back door. And that is not what we're after. And I think the unintended consequence of this, as well intended as it may be, is it's going to deprive taxpayers, more citizens, of an opportunity to have a meaningful conversation with my staff or the Office of Dispute Resolution. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any further opponents in the room? Further opponents in the room? We have none online. Informational witnesses? Seeing no informational witnesses. Questions from the committee? Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Bell, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bell. When I worked at the Department of Revenue, I was instructed that absolutely the Office of Dispute Resolution is independent from the rest of the staff and took pains to exemplify that independence. They held their own public hearings, did their own thing, and often couldn't communicate between the two unless, you know, one needed factual information from the other. So could you explain how this might impact the quality of and the independent resolution of ODR?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell, that's a good question. I think really it would be the quality, and it's really not so much, you know, our job, my job, and you've heard it from Director Beatty, is to get it right. We want the right answer. And admittedly, I've lost enough cases in my career. Still think I'm right, but the courts maybe disagreed. The object is to get it right. In the first instance, is to give the taxpayer an opportunity to tell their story. Tell us in the informal review, but then also tell the hearing officers at ODR why they did it, you know, filed a correct return, for lack of a better word. And I think what you will see is, as ODR has increased pressure to get cases out the back door to ensure the statutes are not, that statute of limitations doesn't expire, I'm worried that taxpayers are going to be shortchanged at the beginning of the process. So, in other words, it'll be shortchanged by virtue of not having the full opportunity to meet with department staff or get information from my staff about why we did what we did. Now, my instruction to my staff has been, you better start telling them that in your first letters. If they're finding out for the first time at ODR what we did and why, that's a different conversation I have with my staff. But what I mean is that the taxpayer is entitled to know what we did, why we did it, and how we did it. And oftentimes, many times at ODR, that's their or their attorney or their accountant's first shot to have that conversation. And that takes time because of people's schedules, just the volume of correspondence that may have existed, the number of years it may be at issue. So you're shortening that period of time. You're compressing when the hearing may happen. And again, the volume of folks that appeal to ODR, we have more and more folks filing individual income tax returns every year. And so to the extent that we have an increased number of folks that we audit and an increased number of folks that challenge those audits, at least to ODR, we've got two hearings officers, one of whom is retiring here in 3 months. So I'm not quite sure how one person in this job market will be able to deal with the flood in a fair way. I'm not so worried about my staff. I'm worried about the citizens that will be deprived of an opportunity to stand up and say, hey, the department's wrong and here's why. And here's the evidence supporting why I'm correct. So I think there's that part. And I think the mediation part is the other aspect of it. We use our hearings officers to, if the person that's handling the adjudication of the case, the other hearings officer is the mediator of the, if they go that route. So I think you're going to end up having a downstream effect with that. If we have one less person or more volume, it's going to be harder to schedule those. And say nothing of if we end up going right to MTAB, I assume that the MTAB docket is going to start increasing as well. And so I think the downstream unintended consequence of this is just a lack of quality for the citizen, and I think that's our primary concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions from the committee? Mr. Bell?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bell, so when the taxpayer gets to a final resolution, and whether it's the courts or MTAB or Office of Resolution, it's ruled in the taxpayer favor, you guys have to pay interest on any taxes that were improperly paid or withheld?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. If it's a refund claim, we pay interest on that. And if it's an assessment, then that's off the books.
Okay. So, Mr. Wangren, I'm going to open up the door for you a little bit here. I'll give you about 5 minutes if you want to comment on some of the things you heard from the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, one of the things, I guess, is that he said this is an administrative rule of the Department of the Internal Revenue Service. It is not. The notice of deficiency is required by the Internal Revenue Code. I can provide those statutes to you. I'm probably the world's foremost expert on notice of deficiency. I know it's an Internal Revenue Code. You can ask Jarrett Coles. He probably knows it as well. And maybe I'm misspeaking, but I do know it is the Internal Revenue Code. And so if you do want to be uniform with the Internal Revenue Code, you need something like a notice of deficiency. The notice of deficiency gives you the opportunity to leave the Internal Revenue Service and get to someone who's not an employee of the Internal Revenue Service. So that's that issue. I'm trying to think, there was something else there that he said that was The extending the statute of limitations. So if the taxpayer and the Department of Revenue want to extend the statute of limitations to allow for a further final agency decision, fine. You know, they've had 3 years. The Internal Revenue Service is able to do it within a three-year period. And here's the other thing that comes up. The Montana Department of Revenue, they're over here on this issue, and they're saying, okay, we want to take longer than 3 years. But you know what? The taxpayer only has 3 years to amend their return with the Internal Revenue Service. And the Montana Department of Revenue follows the Internal Revenue Service tax return. So as an example, when this all started, we had an issue of Section 179, which allows you to expense that asset all in 1 year versus depreciating it out over a period of time. The Department of Revenue was auditing the years 16, 17, and 18 for employee business expenses. They added the year 18 because they always audit 3 years, even though 18 doesn't even have any employee business expenses because the law changed. So we decided, well, in the year 16, we'll switch to a Section 179 because we're not going to get any depreciation after tax year 18 anyway. This would result in a large refund to the taxpayer. The auditor waited until virtually almost the last day before she was going to issue her audit. We didn't know whether to file an amended return and claim Section 179 or not. Thankfully, the director came up in our favor and said, you know what, all three of those tax years were going to be accepted as filed. And so we agreed to that, and that was the way that was resolved. But that's kind of when this whole issue got started as to, can you hold an audit on the very last day of the statute of limitations, and then mail it, but the taxpayer doesn't even get it before the statute of limitations is expired, and that's good enough? I don't think so.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator Vermeer, care to close on your bill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for a very nice hearing today. I see that Senate Bill 427 is in good hands, and I'll close with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This will close the hearing on Senate Bill 427. Senators, we're going to stand at ease again here, and Senator Treves, could you do me another favor? It looks like you'd like to do a little exercise. We need Senator Lang. He's down in room 317, Finance and Claims, I believe. Senate tax come back to order. Members, we're working here on Senate Bill 442, Senator Lang. Going to give proponents and opponents each about 15 minutes or so, and 15 minutes or so for questions from the committee. So I know there's quite a few proponents in here. If a few of you who want to talk can lead off, and then the others, if please don't repeat testimony. You can just say me too and tell us who you are and where you're from. So certainly appreciate it. Senator Lang, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, distinguished Senate Taxation Committee. I know you're the hardest working committee in the Senate, so I will, and you can handle the group that we have here assembled today, too. This is a bill, Senate Bill 442. I'm Mike Lang, L-A-N-G, from Senate District 17, which runs from where the Great Milk River runs into Montana and then goes down along Highway 2 and out through the state into the Missouri River, and then I end up over bordering North Dakota. So that's the full district of 17. And one of your senators on this panel, him and I work for many of the people along most of the border of the between Canada and Montana. Senate Bill 442 is it's a thought process of what can we do. We all want to create habitat. We believe in access to habitat, whether it's private, state, or federal in our state. We know we have a beautiful state, and that habitat needs to be cherished, whether you just want to look at it, whether you want to hunt in it, whether you want to fish in it, or whatever. But when you come to certain parts of Montana, this is unjust, but the counties are willing to invite people to their counties for hunting and weather, and you all know, it's like, what was it, 2-3 days ago, we had water running down the streets. Now we got snow and ice out there, and that's the nature of Montana. That's a good thing. That's why we have these people that are good people that want to live here. But this bill is to bring some money to the counties. With a formula, and I didn't know how to do it, but I just walked into the drafter. As you all know, you go to your drafter, and I want to talk about block management. I want to talk about wildlife management areas. Those are the two pressing areas. And we want to talk about the county, the roads that are in these counties throughout the state of Montana, and we want to talk about state and federal lands. And they put together a formula, which, you could probably 1% or 2% in some other way to fit your county if that's what you want to do. But that the percentages that came up here were from the drafter, and I'm okay with this because it's really doing what we want to do, getting the marijuana money, which was for habitat. We want to give you access to your habitat. We want to have good roads all the time if we can, and this money will be just for going to the habitats. And if now we could just to get the committee a little involved, what we're talking about and why these commissioners and have problems in Montana with these roads. They have their county road tack or the road building up. They try to do a good job, and they do a good job. But Mother Nature and people visiting the territories create some problems. So, Jared, if you would run this. This is a video of Eastern Montana. And I want to know what kind of soil you call this thing when you get done. But please watch the video, and this is what we're about. Gumbo is as hard as concrete until you put a little water on it. And then I become 6'6" instead of 5'7", and that's how things are out there. And we just need, this is a SUV going down. These are the county roads that you see in eastern Montana. And the one thing they didn't get on there, I want to thank them for getting this done, but there was what I saw, and this video came from PBS, Public Broadcast Systems. It was called Gumbo in Eastern Montana. And there was a SUV that had driven and it slid off the road. It was colored white, but you couldn't tell that. And that didn't make the video, but so that's what we're about. Please listen to the comments, pros and opponents. It's to give you access to habitat. We love habitat. As you can see in those pictures, a lot of habitat out there, whether it's scenic or whether it's wildlife. But Montana is a great habitat state, and we'd like to proceed. I'll wait to close. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. All right, we're going to start into proponents here. We're going to try to go to about 10:40 or so. So first proponent.
Okay, I'll be brief, real brief. I have other people behind me. My name is Roman. Roman Zalawi, Z-Y-L-A-W-Y. Roman, common spelling. Roman soldier, Roman meal bread. And I am the president of MACO, the current president of MACO. So I, while I am a Mineral County Commissioner, I'm here to say that while this is not a MACO bill, we notice that Senator Lang's bill has strong merit. So it got our notice and our attention, and I'm here as the MACO president to support it. It makes sense to help us maintain the roads that people are ever increasingly using to access public lands. MACO supports this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Chairman Hertz, member of the committee, Richard Dunbar, that's D-U-N-B-A-R, and I am a Phillips County commissioner, so the roads that Mike had on that video are what we have out in South Phillips County. And in Phillips County, it's probably 60 to 70 miles to get to the Missouri River. And the hunting and the fishing, it's a year-round deal anymore from Fort Peck all the way to the Missouri River Bridge. And Phillips County does have a FLAP project. That's a federal lands access program that started out 12 years ago at $1.3 million. It's up to over $3 million, and there's a 13.8% match to it. That's over $450,000 that we'll have to come up to try to match them dollars. So to move these dollars into the county for roads would be a big benefit. And I'll urge your support of that bill, and let the rest speak.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Yes, Chairman and committee, my name is Ross Butcher, B-U-T-C-H-E-R. And I am a commissioner from Fergus County, so we're right there in the heart of Montana, and we're right in this country with that kind of gumbo in northern Fergus County. I'm also the vice chair of MACO, so I also represent MACO's support of this. I just want to say that I think the senator really came up with a good idea. I look at this and think this is appropriate, that recreational users support recreational users. So I think that if we can get this additional funding, the counties really want to help provide access to our public lands. And this is based off of, you know, one of the factors in there is block management. One of the things that really drives private owners kind of in a negative way is when they see that kind of impact on access roads to their property. And if we can demonstrate that those folks that are coming out there and are able to hunt and recreate and enjoy both the private and the public land in these areas, that we can have some specific money that's there to keep those roads in better shape. You know, with that kind of country, it's really hard to promise that they're going to be perfect, but certainly it'll be much easier for us in Fergus County and Petroleum County and all those counties in that area to be able to hit that with a blade more often and actually keep those roads in better shape. So I rise in support of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jason Strofe, last name spelled S-T-R-O-U, F as in Frank. I am a commissioner out of Custer County, Montana, and I'm currently the immediate past president of MACO. I agree with all of the comments that have been made up until this point. I would like to make one additional comment. The gas tax money that is generated comes off of gas tax roads as mapped and established through MDT. In Custer County, we have over 750 miles of gas tax roads that we are tasked with trying to maintain. We don't have the same leverage that the state does with the gas tax money that we collect in leveraging with the federal dollars. So these dollars actually go 100% into this maintenance. And for Custer County, an estimated $80,000 to $85,000 is what we generate from gas tax. That is a small portion of what is required to purchase blades, fuel the blades, and pay the operators to run those blades, as well as all of the auxiliary equipment that's necessary with maintaining those roads. So please support, and I stand in as a proponent of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Randy Brodell. I'm a county commissioner from the Flathead. My last name is B-R-O-D-E-H-L. I support this bill and appreciate the sponsor bringing this. Talk to you about a little different aspect that we have in the Flathead. We have 1,400 miles of gravel roads that we maintain in the county. And the problem that we're finding with the growth that we're seeing in tourism, and you know it's growing exponentially not only in most of Montana, but certainly in the Flathead, is that the tourists begin usually in about June, and the wear and tear that they're creating on our gravel roads has been incredible. The problem that develops is we get so much washboard that we can't get fire equipment in there when fire season starts in August and September, and we can't keep up. We don't have the funding to keep up with it. This would help us go a long ways towards making sure that when we do have a fire start, that those roads are ready to go and we're able to get fire equipment there right away. I appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be available.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Shane Gorder, last name G-O-R, D as in dog, E-R. I'm from Richland County. I'm the Maco Pass president. The one thing I haven't heard is emergency service. We have to get out there when these individuals get in there. They're here for recreational. They're here for tourism. They're here for hunting. But we know, as county commissioners, the cost of gravel in the roads. We heard the fuel. We've heard the cost of the blades. But it's all on the rise. And recreation is on the high side. So I encourage you to support this bill. Help us out with counties that are got the state ground, the BLM ground, for people to get in and use. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Devlin, D-E-V-L-I-N, Todd with two Ds. I'm a Prairie County Commissioner and past president of the Montana Association of Counties. Prairie County is a pretty unusual county because we're mostly our federal land is LU land, so it was homesteaded at one time and then reverted back to federal ownership, which means it's checkerboard ownership. So if I give access to private, I have to give access, and about 90% of our federal land on our county roads is accessible by a county road. We have about 95% of our county roads have written easement on it, which I think is the best in the state of Montana. We're very pro-access. But one of the issues we're having is block management is just tearing our roads to pieces. And a lot of them need more gravel on them to make them safe for our residents and non-residents. And I hope you support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Good morning, Chair Hertz and members of the committee. I'm Miles Hutton, H-U-T-T-O-N. I'm a Blaine County Commissioner and a rancher from Turner. I am in favor of this bill that Senator Lang has brought. I think it would go a long ways to alleviate some of the issues that we've seen, like the others have brought up, that where the roads that normally don't get a lot of traffic get a tremendous amount of traffic, and if they get rutted up in the wrong time of the year, they're pretty much there for the rest of the year until you can get to them, and the emergency services have problems getting them. We've seen that in South Blaine County as well, into the monument area and stuff like that. And it would help to allow more access and better access to these parcels of public. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I want to especially thank Senator Lang for his work on this. He recognized a problem. He's finding a solution to help us provide better access to the public lands we have around Montana. Ravalli County, I'm sorry, my name is Greg Chilcott. That's C-H-I-L-C-O-T-T for the record. I'm a Ravalli County Commissioner and also a past president of the Montana Association of Counties. We are over three quarters public lands in Ravalli County. And we see a lot of people trying to access those public lands, and that habitat that we're trying to protect, having better access keeps people on the road and in the rights of way. And I stand in support of Senate Bill 442. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mike McGinley, Beaver Head County Commissioner. McGinley spelled M-C, capital G-I-N-L-E-Y. But once again, Beaver Head County Commissioner, and also currently fiscal officer for MACO. Can't say much more than everybody else has said, except all this marijuana taxes. I don't think there's a better place to put this. Thanks, Senator Lang, for bringing this bill. We stand in support of 442. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Name's John Fahlgren, J-O-H-N-F-A-H-L-G-R-E-N, Commissioner of Valley County. I stand to support the bill. Thank Mike for bringing the bill. I think just to put in perspective, if we got the amount of money that it shows on Mike's chart, it would be about an 8% increase in our budget for road. So it would be very helpful. And a big part of our road use, or our most difficult roads to maintain, are those fishing access roads to Fort Peck Lake.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Joette Woods, J-O-E-T-T-E-W-O-O-D-S. I am a Liberty County Commissioner, and I am also second vice president of MACO. We stand in support of this bill, and we also would like to thank Senator Lang for his hard work on this. Thanks.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Larry Hendrickson, H-E-N-D-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. I'm a Liberty County Commissioner, and I'll save you the time. Me too.
Next proponent. Do we have any proponents online? First, I want to just thank all you county commissioners for coming. It's always nice to see other elected officials. Remember, you can always Zoom in to any committee meeting. You don't have to drive over here, but we'd certainly like to hear input from elected officials. So we'll go on to opponents. Opponents in the room, you have until about 10:50.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Noah Marion, last name is spelled M-A-R-I-O-N, here representing Wild Montana today. First, I do want to thank all the county commissioners that are here and appreciate all of their great service, and for the sponsor for his great work. Unfortunately, we are going to oppose this bill today, and excuse the pun, but we just really think this is the wrong pot of money to take this for county roads. This would result in a loss of over $30 million each biennium for Habitat Montana, a nearly 75% reduction in the available funding for that program. Our population here is growing and development is speeding up. Since 1990, 1.3 million acres of ag and forest lands have been developed. Wealthy newcomers are buying up large blocks of agricultural land and driving up land costs, making it more expensive to conserve our land and taking it out of ag production. The USDA says that ag land prices in Montana have increased 12% just in the last 2 years. Furthermore, the state is facing over $1 billion of surplus funding. There's enough tax revenue to expand new budget priorities like this without sacrificing public access, habitat conservation, and the ability for many families to keep their farms and ranches in viable for the future, for future generations. And this money has already been put to work in really good ways. In the last biennium, Governor Gianforte's highest profile Habitat Montana project, the acquisition of the Big Snowy Mountains Wildlife Management Area, used over $5 million of this recreational marijuana revenue to complete that purchase. And that project opened up over 100,000 acres of public lands to better access. And so we would love to work with the sponsor to find a different funding source for this, but as stand, we do oppose.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Chair Hertz, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Leo, last name is spelled L-E-O-W, and I'm here representing the Montana chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Habitat Montana is an increasingly popular program and our state's best tool to keep Montana, Montana. With all of the change and development pressure that we're experiencing in the state, this program is more important than ever. With a record surplus, there's no need to undo the actions of this legislature from the 2021 session. Just 2 years ago, this body set the portion of funding for Habitat Montana from the marijuana tax revenue, of course, after the HART fund portion comes out, at 20%, and we ask you to keep that in place. But we also understand that the need for county road maintenance is real, and we are sympathetic to the sponsor and his goal with this bill. Anyone who's been stuck in gumbo, I think, would be sympathetic to this cause and understand the need. But taking the money from Habitat Montana does not need to be the solution to this problem. One option counties have at their disposal is to put in place a local option marijuana tax. Another source of marijuana tax revenue could be opened up through that, and counties could, of course, use that money to fund road maintenance. We ask that you either table Senate Bill 442, or maybe better yet, amend it so it does not take that money away from Habitat Montana, and get those funds in another way. There would be funds available there, the remaining portion that goes to the general fund, for instance. You could create a new special revenue account and direct it that way. So regretfully, we're here to oppose the bill and ask you to either amend it or table 442. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ben Lamb, as in sacrificial. I am up here today representing the Montana Wildlife Federation. We're certainly in support of what the senator is trying to do. You know, as an organization that is always thrilled to talk about gumbo roads because it defines some of the biggest parts of our life. You know, there is a very real need. However, as the other opponents have said, there are better ways to get about this. And at some level, you know, the appropriations process is the right place to have this conversation. Robbing Peter to pay Paul just sets Montanans against each other. And, you know, we have also talked with the sponsor and said that we're more than happy to find a way to find a better, more sustainable source of funding for the counties. But we do feel like, you know, taking this 20% allocation, it simply goes against what the legislature did last session and what the voters said when they passed I-190. And so for those reasons, you know, totally in support of the sponsor and the problems that the counties have, but opposed to the bill. And for that, we would ask that you do table this bill and, you know, let the hunting community work with the county commissions and the sponsor to find a more sustainable path forward that doesn't pit people against each other. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents? Further opponents in the room? None online? Informational witnesses? None online. We'll go to questions from the committee. Senator McClafferty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope I say this gentleman's name right. Roman Zylway? Did I say that right?
Hello? Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Did I say your name right? Zylway?
Zalawi.
Okay. Thank you.
Don't look at the spelling. Just Zalawi.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Zalawi. I have a couple questions for you. And my first question is, how many of the counties that are you representing today actually have marijuana sales in their counties? Do you know?
Oh, that's a good question. I couldn't tell you the firmed up number, but because there are a few that the voters didn't agree to tax. Okay. So I would have to defer that question to, I'd have to get back to you, but I don't know the answer. I'm going to speculate. There's probably, do you recall, is there about four or five somewhere in that neighborhood?
You can go ahead and get back to me. Yeah. If you,
I really don't know.
If you get back to us, that'd be appreciated.
I would appreciate that. May I follow up,
please? Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. My next question is, one of the opponents mentioned local sales tax on the marijuana. Has that ever been discussed within your group of doing that with the counties that do sell marijuana and using that money for road repairs?
Yeah, the individual counties discuss it. I don't know the outcomes of their particular conversations. I just know that overall MACO and all the 56 counties within, in general, support it. But I don't know exactly how they've decided to share that or tax that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, could I please have a question for the sponsor?
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Lang.
Mr. Chairman, Senator McLaughlin, watch your page button, Senator.
Thank you, I will. Senator Lang, Mr. Chair, Senator Lang, you and I had a little bit of a conversation yesterday, a real quick conversation, and you know, one of the things that I'm concerned about is that the voters, I feel, felt that when they voted to go ahead and have marijuana become legalized in the state of Montana through I-190, that they thought that some of the money was going to go to Habitat for public access and different things. Knowing that, and knowing that when we came in January, the estimate of our marijuana money was way bigger than what we thought, why not go after some of that overestimated money?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator McLaugherty. The real reason that I went after it is I firmly believe in my heart that we have Habitat, and we've talked about maybe not all counties voted for the tax. I don't know that. But I do know that all counties in this state have Habitat. They have, whether you want to look at it, whether you want to drive on it, whether you want to get there. You have to get there somehow. And that was the thought process of this. And I voted for Habitat, and I vote for access. But to get there, you have to drive on these roads. And it's an unjust thing that has happened because of we're using more of it. We're creating more Habitat. We're protecting more Habitat. I think most of these county commissioners are involved with agriculture somehow that have been up here today, or firefighting or whatever. They've been on these roads. They know what it has to do. So the real, and I call it negligent or whatever you want, my thought process was, okay, we have public lands that need access. We have Habitat that needs access. They have to have a road to get there, and these roads need to be taken care of. And I think access to these roads needs to be generated. The help of cost of needs to be generated from how the tax got there, why the Habitat's needed, Senator.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have one last follow-up.
One last follow-up. We got a lot of committee members who want to ask questions.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Senator Lang. My last question is some of the opponents have suggested that they would be willing to work with you and try to find another pot of money. And I realize that this would be a revenue bill, so we do have a little time. We don't?
Okay. No.
Well, would you be willing to take a little bit of time and work with them to within the next day or so and see if that really exists, that extra pot of money somewhere?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator McLaugherty. Yes, I've worked with these groups before. As you know, I've been involved with the bird bill, called the sage grouse bill, and we had to sit down a lot of times and discuss, and we did. And that's why they've come up to the podium and say we respect Senator Lang, and that's part of their process. I'm not scared of a discussion. I do feel that this is the best way, the cleanest way to get the money out of the tax deal over to the gas tax and MDT and go and revenue and go from there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Lowe, I think it is. Mr. Chair, Mr. Lowe, you mentioned 2 years ago there was a plan in place to capture these taxes and this revenue and how it was going to be spent. Could you explain the process that went on 2 years ago to get to that point?
Chair Hertz, Senator Heyman, absolutely. If I can brush up my memory from 2 years ago. But yes, it was a long process. House Bill 701 was the ultimate product. We had many bills dealing with the voter-approved initiative I-190. There's a lot of debate about what to do with how to regulate this new recreational marijuana, what to do with the tax revenue. There were committees formed, and through that very long process with lengthy and robust debate, we arrived at the product. We being, of course, you, the legislature, but also with input from the public, we arrived at the product of House Bill 701. And the intent of my testimony is just to share that after all of that thorough debate and discussion, I think we came up with a good product, and it seems hasty to come back 2 years later and change that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Was there any discussion at that point in time about county roads?
I do not recall that. It certainly could have been. There were, I can't say that I caught all of the discussion, but I personally do not recall any discussion about county roads being part of the
mix. So that was never brought up?
Okay. Not that I remember.
All right. One final question. So how do you think the voters are going to feel if this bill passes and this money is captured for roads? Do you have an opinion about that?
Well, I think much like in my testimony, I think folks are sympathetic to the road maintenance needs, but we were also very clear when we approved I-190 in 2020. And then again, last session, I know any legislators who were here last session certainly heard from constituents about that. People feel really strongly about the use of those funds to protect the things that we love about Montana, keeping our family farms and ranches and agricultural production, providing funding for protecting habitat, and keeping our Montana way of life for hunting and fishing and recreating outdoors. People feel really strongly about that. In fact, there's a public lands rally happening today. And so I believe that if this, and we actually have a couple other proposals that also would take money away from Habitat Montana from the marijuana tax revenue. And I think if those move forward, we're going to have another robust debate over this, and legislators will be hearing from their constituents again.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably best for the sponsor, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Treves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. I think of the 11 counties represented here, two had counties that voted yes on I-190 in 2020. I think three have a local option tax, and six voted no. I don't necessarily mind this bill. I think I'm okay with it, other than the fact that I think the six that voted no probably should opt into allowing the sale and use of recreational marijuana before they get money from it, just so they're participating. And even if they don't have any sales, at least they're willing to participate in the system that's going to be providing money back to them.
Is that a question or is that a statement?
What do you think about an amendment like that, just for fairness?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Treves. If your comment was to tell those counties to vote a certain way, that's up to them. I think the thing we're getting off on, that maybe this committee wants to get off on, but I don't feel it's necessary, is that you might not have any tax in that county on marijuana, but you have the habitat and you have the roads and you've seen pictures of them. You know, every county, and I was in a preparation for this bill, I started to send emails to counties, send me in what it cost you a dollar to maintain a road. And finally, it came down almost the same thing as MACO, or that the drafter found that counties have for roads and what it costs them. Because you take their county budget on roads divided by their miles, that becomes an easy way to figure. It's $1,500, $1,800 a mile. And in my county, it's 5,000 people in Phillips County, southern Phillips County predominantly, but even the people in northern Phillips County are complaining now that people are coming to see this great habitat that agriculture has created. They're loving it. They're loving the access. Going north one day last fall, every approach had someone on it. Why did they have an approach? Why was there someone parked on approach? Number one, the roads were bad.
Number two, that is a high populated area of block management. So those ranchers have said, okay, we're willing to provide our private property to block management. But then, as you heard from testimony, one of the complaints is the roads just get messed up. Because today, we don't, when I grew up, you chained up a pickup. Today, you got a four-wheel drive, you got a camper behind you, you got a boat behind you, you got a horse trailer, whatever, and you got lots of horsepower. You lock it in four-wheel drive and you just go. And our counties have had to rescue a lot of those vehicles. If you notice the trailers of today, the mobile trailers, the bottom of the trailer is this high off the axle. Well, they used to be down, but now they couldn't. The wheels wouldn't turn when getting full of gumbo because they wanted to go. And you as a Montanan, we want Montanans to access this habitat. And you live in Billings or in Great Falls, and you've set aside 2 weeks to come to go out to eat, to wherever you're going to enjoy with your family, whatever. And it rains. You're going anyway. You got 2 weeks off your job. You're going there. And you're going whether it's rain or not. And these counties need that. I just think that the big thing, you can talk about the tax all you want. The tax was for habitat. We have created the habitat. It's still there. We will create more. But these roads need to be taken care of to get you to there. Because there's nobody in this state can access habitat unless you're rich enough to have a helicopter pick you up to the local airport and fly you into the mountain, and you get to walk around. The rest of the time, you're going in a vehicle that needs a road to get there. Mr. Senator Trevis.
Thank you, Senator, for part of your close. Senator Temple.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably for anybody from MACO or the sponsor. You mentioned that the cost is like 1,500 to 1,800 miles, cost per mile. Does anybody know how many total dirt miles there are in the state of Montana? Not everybody jump up at once, but anyway, if you can find that out and send it to us, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you. Senator Dunwell.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, question for the MACO president, please. Roman Zalowski? Zalawi?
Zalawi.
Zalawi.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Zalawi, one of the commissioners was on his way here to testify as an opponent, and obviously he didn't make it in time. But so I'm going to ask you, please, first of all, have you gotten that information on the number of counties that allow marijuana sales and those who do not?
I was hoping that someone would ask me back. So for your immediate answers, because that's, I know how that goes, kicking that can down the road. But so I'm not very techie, I apologize, but if I can defer to my colleague, Senator Dunwell, Mr. Chair, he's here with a spreadsheet on his phone, and he can answer everything from the monetary numbers of the counties that did pass sales and the counties that
didn't. That'd be fine. Which okay. Commissioner
Mr.
is that?
Gorder.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Shane Gorder from Richland County. So the spreadsheet is out from the Department of Revenue. Roman couldn't answer that because he got it in here as quick as we could. But you can see on that spreadsheet that there's roughly 25 counties that have voted in adult use. I heard the question a while ago from one of you that said, well, maybe that county should vote it in first before they get that money. You know, the voters, this is something that they had a decision to decide. But as a county commissioner, we can't just put a roadblock up and say, by the way, you can't hunt, you can't use this county road because our voters didn't allow medical marijuana, recreational marijuana. So, sorry, goodbye. We can't do that. I live next to North Dakota. North Dakota hasn't passed it yet. We have hundreds of people coming over to Richland County and into Montana. It's not about whether who's using it or who's not using it. It's about we as county, we need to fix the roads. We need to keep medical services, fire and emergency. And we could utilize this and utilize it for those roads. And you saw the video, and I'm a hunter too. That's exactly what it looks like. People get in there, people can't get out. The spreadsheet breaks it down for each county. It's very clear how much money's there. And it's just, we're asking if we can just have a little bit to utilize for our county roads on that state, getting to state ground and federal ground.
Thank you.
Thank you. A follow-up, please, for the back to the MACO president.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Zalawi. So I understand that it was not a unanimous MAKO decision in favor of 442, Senate Bill 442, what we're hearing now, that it was basically split. Can you elaborate on that, please?
It was not a MAKO bill. No, it was...
Pardon me. Just to clarify, Mr. Chair, that if MAKO weighed in on Senate Bill 442, maybe you did not. Maybe that's why MAKO isn't here being represented, because it was pretty much an even Stevens split, as I understand, on counties who want to take this money that was promised to public lands and those counties that don't want to take the money that was promised for public lands. I mean, I don't think anyone's in disagreement, sir, that we need to upgrade our county roads and get rid of the gumbo, but
I guess my question is,
Mr. Chair,
is this a MAKO bill or not? And if it's not,
my question is, Mr. Chair, what was the split, please?
Yeah.
And I was not aware of the split. I was informed that we have support. I was unaware of the Lewis and Clark County Commissioner, and I saw one of them recently, and I didn't get that communication. The communication I've been receiving was to come up here and wholeheartedly support it. So.
From Mr. Chair, follow up. From MAKO?
From my colleagues.
Okay. Is that MAKO, the MAKO organization?
Past presidents, vice presidents.
Mr. Zalowski, do you have any...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
No, I'm trying to get to the question. We're moving on here. Do you have any information on the number of counties who support this and the number of counties who oppose it?
In terms of what she's referring to?
This bill.
I do not have a numerical count of that.
Is that available?
I will definitely get that. I will go out in the hall and call the office and try to get that.
Good.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. Yep. Senator Molnar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Richard Dunbar, Commissioner Dunbar.
Mr. Chair, Senator Molnar.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dunbar, you testified that you have a program up there for access to federal lands, and that you got to be able to fix the roads to be able to access lands. Optically, do you think it would be of benefit for, at least for your county and others involved in that, that we put money into the Federal Lands Access Program, thereby freeing up money for the county roads that get you to the federal lands? At least it's going to a wildlife access kind of program as opposed to, quote, county roads.
Senator... The Federal Lands Access Program is administrated out of Vancouver, Washington, and the process between that organization and the state of Montana is way more complicated with way more strings attached to it. I mean, it's just, this one stretch of road, it's 20 miles in length. When the application was put in, it was estimated, made it at $1.3 million. And it's been 12 years and hasn't got anywhere off the ground due to different people ahead of the program and lost the information. I mean, and now it's over $3 million road. We're getting close to getting it designed, and hopefully in the next year or two we'll get some on the ground. But now instead of coming up with $100,000 match, we got to come up with $400,000 to $450,000 match. Well, we don't have that kind of money on our road budget, so, and we can use in-kind. We're going to try to use as much in-kind, but $450,000 in-kind from a road crew is a lot of road graders, a lot of trucks of gravel. I don't know if we can handle that. So we're going to be, we don't want to lose our project, but we're going to be stretched to find that $400,000 to match that project. So these funds that would come would be, if Phillips County got these funds, I think the number would, in that spreadsheet, is like 170-some thousand. That, if that first pot of money would probably all go to match that federal access, which would take off. There's 20 miles of gumbo that you don't drive on if it rains. There's been pickups and motorhomes left in the middle of the road trying to access, go to the lake for hunting. And they're not Phillips County residents. They're from all over the state. So does that kind of answer your question?
Follow up
very quickly. If $175,000 of this money were given to you as in-kind to match that program, never mind all the strings you have to go through,
right,
that then would free up $175,000 to put into road maintenance. Would that be an acceptable compromise to you and yours, Mr. Commissioner?
Well, I'm not quite sure if I understand the question completely, but for us to come up with that match, we're going to have to tap into other funds. I mean, we can't go to the taxpayers, raise the taxes, because we're capped at, you know, that. But I'm not quite sure I understand if it would free up anything or not. But
thank you.
Senator Beard, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to follow up on Senator Dunwell's earlier question, and I did see that we have a MACO individual here. Mr. Riddle, would you be able to elaborate on the general consensus among the counties in the state of Montana, their interest in Senate Bill 442?
Yes, ma'am. For the record, Mr. Chairman, Jason Riddle, RITTAL. I'm the deputy director at the Montana Association of Counties. And I guess I'll just say I'm an informational witness at this point, since I didn't stand up earlier. A couple of things. I think you got the answer on the number of counties that voted to have recreational marijuana, so that's been answered. At our annual conference, through our process, there was a resolution that was brought forward related to the marijuana tax and using that for purchase and procurement of habitat. The resolution that came out of there was that MACO would support legislation that used those dollars to the benefit of counties. It was pretty broad, but it passed out with that language. And I will say that it was not unanimous. I don't remember the tally. I want to say we probably had a half a dozen counties that were not supportive and a vast majority that were. But that was not a unanimous vote. I do remember that. But because of the vagueness of the resolution, we did not bring a bill. We're tracking three of them. This one has the most benefit to counties, so this is the one we're putting our weight behind. Thank you.
Senator McCamey? All right. Any further questions from the committee? I have one for Noah. Miriam? Noah, do you know how much money the state has in the Habitat Montana funds?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the balance with me, but I'm happy to provide that information.
If you could, please.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right. With that, Senator McClafferty.
I just need to clarify something because I don't think I heard it right. So could I please ask Jason Ritter a question?
Yes, sure.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Ritter. I just have to clarify this in my head because I don't think I got it right. You said that the board had had approved to go ahead after the marijuana money, but it did not specify habitat money, just marijuana money.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, so our resolution did specify the marijuana money from the marijuana tax, specifically the 20% that is set for habitat. That was specific in the thing. And so what happens was, if we don't have specificity to bring, and this is a rare instance where we have a MACO resolution where we're not really bringing an actual bill, it wasn't specific enough to do that. So what happens is, when we see the bills, what we do is we take them to the executive committee, and you've seen most of them here, and they tell us whether we're going to support a particular bill. I didn't come in on this because we have almost our whole executive committee in the room and brought it forward in that behalf. So our executive committee is unanimous in supporting this bill. The resolution itself during conference was not unanimous, but it got voted in, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, Senator Lang, would you care to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and yes, I would, and thank you for the comments and the desire to make this. As was stated by Mr. Lamb, we've worked to build this bridge. I think Montana has got a big bridge. Right now it's covered with some gumbo. We have to get landowners access and people who want to use this land for access, whether it's private, state, or federal, on the same bridge. And right now, as he will talk about, and we've talked about many times, it's a slippery slope, and that's what happens when you put gumbo on there. Now, the one thing that, in response to the discussion that we seem to be getting involved about, is tax instead of habitat. I would suggest to the committee, if anybody is of the counties that do not support this bill, remove from that list. They can save us some money that way too, if they want to do it that way. But this is a good bill. And I invite anybody to come out to Eastern Montana. It's anywhere. And when I was involved with the sage grouse, we had meetings with the DEQ on how we're going to work through this stuff. And I was just a freshman then, and I was sitting around and I said, holy smokes, these guys are all talking about how their roads cannot stay good because of the access that's being created. And now it's when I was a freshman. That was over 10 years ago. We have created a lot of access. And we have great habitat, and we should access it. But one of the things that you seem to be beating up against is block management. Block management is a very successful program in this state. And if it wasn't for that, there would be a lot less hunting. And I think you're talking to private landowners that want to have a decent road that they can use other than the months when people are accessing this block management or wildlife management areas. Please consider this bill, and I support a due pass on Senate Bill 442. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. That'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 442. Members, please hang around here for a minute after we clear the room. I just want to talk about process in the next few days here. All right, members, we cannot meet tomorrow. I gave the room to local government. They're going to use our room starting in the morning, and then they're going to meet all day tomorrow. We're not going to meet on Monday, but I do want to meet on Tuesday to take some executive action on any general bills that we have here in front of us. That may include probably tabling a number of bills just to get them off the status sheet. And so if you got any amendments on these general bills, Jared, does everybody have a list of the bills on there in front of them? Okay. And Jared, have you marked those?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if you look at the sheet I put in front of you, there'll be a G right to the right of the bill number. That means it's a general bill. I also designated which one's a revenue bill just to make that clear as well. Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. And so the schedule for next week, I've talked to the majority leader. It looks like we're going to meet all day on Thursday on the floor to do second reading, and then we'll come in on Friday morning to clean up third reading. So if we do executive action on Tuesday morning at 9, and if we move anything out of here that might even be amended, that'll still have an opportunity to get to the floor on Thursday. So with that, has anybody had any questions or concerns? Senator McLafferty?
This is probably the teacher in me, but you know, the other day we listened to SB 125 and we just kind of left it in the file, right? Because we did a vote on it. And I feel like we left unfinished business, and so I'd like to make the motion to table it.
That was Senator McLafferty. That was my intention to do that on Tuesday, to go through the bills that, but if you want to make that motion now, we can.
Sure. I told you, it's just the teacher in me. I feel like it has to be completed. So could I make that motion?
Sure.
To go ahead and table SB 125?
Well, motion. So Bill 125, which was my bill in regards to limiting levies to, after we amended, it was 6 years. I don't hear if we amended it. So. Yeah, so it's a non-debatable motion, so let's do a roll call vote, tabling Senate Bill 125.
Senator Zolnikov?
He's, yes, by proxy.
Senator O'Brien?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator McLafferty?
Yes.
Senator Beard?
Yes.
Senator Temple?
Yes.
Senator Hayman?
Yes.
Senator Ellsworth?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Molnar?
Yes.
Senator Trevis?
Yes.
Senator McCamey?
Yes.
Senator Dunwell?
Yes.
Chairman Hertz?
Yes. Unanimous. Bill's table. All right, Senator Temple?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a quick question. Everything that's marked G, we have to have done by Thursday or Friday. Is that true?
Yes, we will need to do executive action on those. If we don't do executive action on a general bill, it just sits here and it dies a natural death as we go through transmittal. The only reason we do like to table them because then they move off his status sheet and we don't have to look at them.
Well, I guess my question is, we are going to do something with each one of these G bills, or
that's my intention. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Probably most likely to table the vast majority of them, including my bills. All right. Any other questions? All right, committee. So we'll get the notice out, but tentatively we'll be meeting Tuesday at 9 a.m. Thank you. Tax committee is adjourned.